You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J, TCRG.
Hey everyone, welcome back to TCRG to CEO Radio. I'm your host, Courtney J, and today's episode is part two of the Ask the Adjudicator episode that launched last week. If you haven't had a chance to listen to part one yet, go head back to last week's episode and you'll get to meet our adjudicators that we're sitting down with, and you'll get to hear their opinions on costuming and a few other topics before we dive into this week's episode. This week's episode tackles another popular topic of choreography. So please stay tuned for more and go ahead and follow along on Instagram so that you can submit any questions or things that you'd like to hear on a future episode. Let's get into today's topics.
Okay, I'm going to start with a small assumption. And the assumption is we would prefer to see dancers two at a time versus three at a time.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Ooh, Becky, maybe?
I was thinking about this because you prompted us with this one. As a teacher, as an adjudicator, as now a family member of people dancing, it's two at a time, hands down, no questions asked. I am sympathetic to the event organizer hat. We already have really long fesh days or majors. You know, the world's lasts like more than a week. Things are already expensive. So I prefer two at a time. I don't know what the solution is. Things have to either last longer or cost more money, or we have to reduce people. That doesn't feel right. So yes, all hats, it's two at a time by a mile, but I'm sympathetic to people organizing events that time, money, resources, giving people opportunity is complicated.
And I think we do all understand that, like in an ideal world, we would love two or even one if that was possible somehow, but it happens where we have three.
Yeah, I have no solution.
What does the dancer, like, you're sitting down in a competition, you find out it's going to run three at a time. This could be grades, it could be prelim, it could be opens, whatever it is. What does that do to you as the adjudicator as you're sitting there? Is it a matter of like everything just happens faster, so every dancer gets just less of a look? Like, take us through the process of, all right, they're dancing three at a time, now what?
Yeah, I think, gosh, and it's so hard too if you're doing grades and they're only dancing 32 bars and it's an advanced beginner reel at 122 beats per minute. Like, those kids are each getting 10 seconds of your eyes, you know, give or take. I think when it comes to three at a time for me, your formula is the same. You're looking for all the exact same things. It just becomes a little bit, people just get less grace, because I'm probably only going to get you once and maybe a second time. And if both of those times were your weakest moments, that's rough, because you may have done your most fabulous other 16 bars. I think it also increases the importance of that first impression. So generally for me, you know, if you're getting three people, you got to decide who to watch first. You know, that you have three people, your eyes need to look somewhere. Generally, the person that catches my eye the most is who I pick to watch first. And that could be because, like Casey talked about, the bravado is just oozing and you're like, okay, let's go. Or maybe they've tripped and it was really funny and they recovered well and you're like, you just have to pick who to watch first. But getting that first impression, I think, is really valuable because you have your most energy, your most mental focus in your first step. So I think that becomes important. I think then, and this is what I would encourage my dancers to do, is make the adjudicator's job easy. I do not mind admitting if there is a lazy route, I'm taking it. So if somebody comes and dances directly in front of my table, I'm going to watch them. One, they're blocking my view of anybody else, and they just made my job dead easy instead of me having to crane my neck to look all the way over there. And don't get me wrong, I would. I don't mind getting a sore neck to make sure everybody gets attention, but you're probably going to get it second when you're either more tired or it's your left foot. So I think some of those stage negotiation things become even more important when there's three people on stage at a time.
Yeah, I'd agree with Becky. First impression is more important. Stage management is more important. I don't mind two or three at a time. I prefer two for the reasons we all discussed earlier. Like, if finances were set aside and like timing was set aside, one by one would be the best, you know. But you know, logistically, we have to do three by three sometimes. So there's no issue for me. They get way fewer comments just because comments take a long time to write. So they might just get T/O, and that's about it, because I have to give them a mark and give them a comment in 10 seconds, which is, you know, a short amount of time to do that. So yeah, I don't mind two by two or three by three, but I definitely prefer two.
I think there's something to be said too about scaling your dancing to what you're doing. But when I say what you're doing, I mean, is it two or three at a time? And are your adjudicators sitting at tables right in front of you, 2 feet from your feet? Or are they sitting at a table a few feet back from a raised stage, right? What is most salient to your adjudicators is going to change based on how many dancers are on the stage doing what. You know, if this is a hard shoe round and there's three dancers at a time and they're a ways away from you, like, you probably can in some ways get away with being, you know, missing a beat or two here or there. It's going to be a lot harder to differentiate those sounds with two other dancers on the stage and a ways back. But your stage presence is going to be a massive factor in that moment. On the flip side, if we're two at a time and we're on a fesh stage and I am 2 feet from your feet and you are missing beats left, right, and center, like, I'm going to notice. And that's going to change the way you're scored, maybe on a major stage, right? Or in a just sort of a larger setting, in an auditorium setting, versus on maybe a gymnasium stage in a fesh setting. I think it is meaningful to think about the scale of the dancing that you're doing and to think about what skills might be rewarded or what points might be important to emphasize in the different settings. Right, in a smaller setting, it might be rhythm is going to be more rewarded. In a larger setting, stage presence and bravado might be more rewarded. And that three versus two at a time has a factor on that too. I think we're going to keep using Casey's word here. Bravado probably gets rewarded in three at a time more than it does in two at a time, when there's a little bit more space to hear and to see technique. Would be my guess. Based on my own impressions of having done both and all the different kinds.
That makes me think, Ryan, if we were to think of, like, you know, we said earlier, really, there's no secret to Irish dancing. It's your basic technique. That maybe is a little glimmer there. People that can adapt their dancing to different stages. So I think a lot of dancers, we rehearse the same 32 or 40 bars for ages, a year even. But the people who are willing or able to make it slightly different, maybe the stage is not as long as you're used to. So you might take it back a little to move it up. Maybe you were going to go that way, but somebody's there. People who can adjust to the stage, and like Ryan said, the relation of the music and the lights, and, you know, even dancers sometimes will get on a raised stage and they're staring down because they want to look at the judges. But actually, your eye level is way out there. That is, I think, a little bit of a trick. Dancers who are really good at adjusting their dancing to the venue they're in showcase their own dancing better.
Okay, I like those answers. All right, the next one is a fun one. And it's a combination of my question and then a submission. What pet peeves do you have as a judge? And what types of things would lead you to score a dancer very low?
I love this. Only because I have two that I can think of right away. But pet peeve is the wrong word. Like, I don't...
Right, like, what things
annoyed
just...
Annoyed at somebody. Gosh, you've done this thing. How irritating. Yeah. You've spoiled my mood. No, but, like, it's something that I would immediately ding. I don't like, because I think it's promoting dangerous habits and bad training when people cheat, using air quotes, their cross. So sometimes you see dancers with this insane overcross, but if you look at their hips are pointing sideways.
Oh, that's one of mine.
And they've got their body rotated to the front because they're not physically strong enough to cross and hold their frame square. And that it bothers me because when you're not actually crossing, you've just twisted your hips to look over there and given the illusion that you're crossing your legs. And I think eventually that's going to lead to some painful issues. And I don't think we should be promoting things like that. The other thing that I would be a bit ruthless on is front clicks that are amazingly high that miss their click. To me, you are doing a front click. If you don't click, you've not done the thing. So it doesn't matter that your foot went behind your head. If it didn't make a beat on the way up, it's like nothing happened for me. And I think sometimes, don't get me wrong, I love flash, I love gimmick, but like you gotta sell the gimmick. So those would be two of my things. Prioritizing extension over actually hitting your rhythm and twisting your hips instead of crossing square.
For me, it's not a pet peeve, but where I'm absolutely unforgiving, and because I went through this as a dancer who had bad timing, but if you're off time, you're at the bottom. And it's like, there's almost nothing you can do to climb your way back up. And, you know, I've given the dancer on the day who is clearly the best dancer of the group, but who goes off time, I'll give them last in that round that they're off time. And I don't care. Even though it's obvious that they're the best dancer, but they've just made a mistake. But I believe in judging the dance more than the dancer. And so off time, I'm just ruthless and unforgiving. If you're off time, you're at the bottom. And then after that, which is somehow related, just a general pet peeve is when is really long sets on a dancer who can't handle it.
I've got a whole thing on this, Casey.
Grabs the sides of my face.
that would be the biggest pet peeve for me. So I'll let Ryan go now.
Well, so look, I think I have to assume, like, there's a difference between someone who has done a really long set and who is clearly working up to it, right? We're at a local fesh, it's September, you know you're working on it for the Aroctus, that's fine. Right. But if we're in November and you're doing a really, really long set that you're
fine, like you'd give them a great score, or fine, like you understand.
Fine, like I understand. Right. I probably will still not give you a great score because I think there's something, but like I kind of get it. But it does drive me crazy. Like if we're in November or we're in May and the North Americans is coming up and this, you know, this dancer is doing a set which is clearly much too hard for them or much too long for them. Except, like, I have to assume that the way that dialogue has gone, and again, not an active teacher, so here's maybe the perspective from not an active teacher, is the way that conversation has gone is someone or their parent or otherwise has said, well, so-and-so who wins the world does a 76 set, so how do you expect me to get any good marks unless I do a 76 set? And they end up on the stage with a set that is completely inappropriate for their dancing. And like my gut reaction is to score that worse than someone who did a 112 set, but did it on time and did it well and did a beautiful set. Like it is okay to do an easier set if you are excellent at it. I have zero problem with this, but it drives me nuts to sit through the last 24 bars of a 76 Kilkenny Races from somebody who is not prepared to do a 76 Kilkenny Races. Like it is okay to do Downfall of Paris at 112.
All right, what other pet peeves do you have?
For me, the other one is, and this is maybe a grade specific one. I know there are a lot, and this may be a place I disagree with a Becky or Casey. Maybe, I don't know. I know there are a lot of adjudicators who will reward a dancer who has, say, you know, a beginner or a novice dancer who has excellent, say, turnout and crossing, but basically does their entire dance at the back of the stage without moving at all. Like, yes, they have the best technique, but they sort of miss the point of being here on a stage judging versus a dancer who might be slightly less well turned out, but has brought some enjoyment, some energy, has moved around the stage, has kind of understood the premise of why we're here doing a fesh. I find dancers who are really, like, especially grades dancers who are really timid on stage, who don't come move forward, who don't sort of participate in the performance aspect, to be like that. That's a dancer that I feel like needs to be encouraged to participate in what we're doing here. And so that can be a little bit of a pet peeve versus, again, like a dancer who might be slightly less technical, but is performing.
So you want the bravado.
I do. Yes.
I think too, because I remember one of the comments I wrote for a few dancers, and it was in the beginner category on our exam, was that they were smiley. And I got questioned on it. And they, do you give points because somebody smiled? No. But I think if somebody is capable of smiling and capable, as Ryan said, to move around, they are super well rehearsed. They know they're dancing well enough and it is in their body well enough that they can start to do those extra things like smile, like move the stage, like interact with the other dancer they're sharing with. And that shows a high level of rehearsal and practice and preparedness. So I think when you start to see that in grades dancers, it's actually symbolic of more than just, oh, what a lovely smile on the munchkin.
That's a great answer. And I agree with you.
Thank you. Hi. Yeah. Put that one out in the exam.
I think Ryan touched on a really important point too, especially in the grades, because you're first place and say an advanced beginner, first, second, third, it actually means something. It actually means you're allowing them to move on to the next level. I find a part of judging is also encouraging certain behaviors rather than just rewarding the best technique. So for example, the dancer who stays at the back, who doesn't move, but has the best crossing turnout and toe height. If you give them first and then they move on, they're not going to do well in the higher levels because there's no performance to them, you know? And so it's sort of a mixture of judging the best dance, but then also understanding that what you give them has an impact on their future and you need to encourage them. Part of your job is to encourage them for the future of their Irish dance career, you know? And so performance is part of that. So they need to be able to do it. So like, I think I agree with you, Ryan, even though I love technique and I love good turnout on a beginner. I think a second place or a third place would be much more appropriate and give amazing comments about like phenomenal turnout, phenomenal technique, whatever you want to say, but then specify you have to move around the stage more. You have to like get in front of the judge. You have to like show them that you're here for a reason and like show them all the rehearsal that you've done and how prepared you are, you know, and that you belong here and that you want it. So yeah, I think I agree with you, Ryan. And I think you touched on a really important point that part of our job is to encourage certain behaviors over others.
Yeah. Thinking of that case before you go on, Courtney, and I'm assuming the fellas will agree. I think another thing that would be, and this would be a proper pet peeve, I'd be irritated, is nasty behavior on stage. People who are being aggressive or being careless with how they're sharing the stage and kind of negatively impacting the other dancers' opportunity to perform. I'm totally like, sometimes you come out of spins without your vision and there's collisions. I'd be really sympathetic to that. Nobody meant it. It's, to me, it's much more about how you recover than the fact that you bumped. But if somebody seems like they're targeting another dancer on stage, I'd be put off by that. Or if somebody's being really clumsy about how they're sharing the stage, I would be put off by that too. I always say, you know, if I have dancers going up and they're intimidated because they're dancing, sharing the stage with somebody who's really good, I'm like, don't worry about it. That person is really good and they want to protect their own dancing. Generally, top dancers are excellent at stage management.
Yeah, it's a skill.
They're going to do whatever they can not to have their own dancing interfered with so that they can put their best dancing forward. And so you should have an easier time. It's when you get people who are newer to that championship level or doing major competitions that aren't as good where things get messy. And I mean, I don't want to say like I would ding somebody just because there was a bump, but I think if you're being intentional or being carelessly disrespectful, that wouldn't be appealing to me.
Agree. All right. The other hot topic that there were a lot of questions submitted around was choreography. So anything from how much does your personal taste or preference in terms of choreography impact your scoring, or difficulty of choreography. And we've touched on certain points here and there, but like how you judge what you perceive to be hard versus what you perceive to be easy. Maybe there's choreography that is really like grating on your personal taste, but it's done technically perfect. How that all comes into play. So you can take that however you want, and whoever wants to go first is welcome. But the impact of choreography on your scores, Becky.
So, and I have no idea if I'm an outlier or not, but I've got a pretty clear view on this. To me, choreography is like a mannequin. A mannequin is there to hold up and sell clothing. On its own, it's not doing anything. I think choreography is there to hold up and show off your technique. Technique to me is still the most important thing. Choreography is there as a vehicle to show it off. So choreography in and of itself isn't going to win you a competition. You could have the world champion steps and you're dancing them like a novice dancer's technique level. You're not going to get rewarded. So I really view choreo job, it's like the mannequin displaying the clothes. It's there to show off your technique. I do think dancers have strengths and weaknesses, and certain choreo would either show off your strength or highlight your weakness, and you need to work around those. I like choreography that is very musical. Like we talked about earlier, if you're dancing three at a time on a big stage, and again, I'm lazy. Don't make me work hard to think, was that rhythm nice or was that off? I like to have a lot of melody in choreo. Make it easy for me to hear that you're on time. If I'm questioning it, whether it was on or off, it hasn't helped you. I do love contrast in choreo, but again, I think that also serves to show off technique. So I love when people are fast, 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 have a little pause, trick, 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 then something adorable, you know, little heel swirls or something. Plus it's eye-catching and it just helps the adjudicator give you more eye time. And to me, that's all choreo does for me. Shows your technique and makes me want to watch what you're doing because you've caught my eye and I can't give you a good score if I'm not watching you dance.
Yeah, I agree with Becky. I see it very similarly to a costume. It's there to serve you. So it's there to show the technique that you're good at. And so you can use it to your advantage in that way. And choreography that is appealing to watch will probably get the judge's eye a bit longer, which means you can probably get a better mark. But the way I see choreography, it's really a school's tool to showcase their dancers better. That's how I see it.
And I think in some ways, like a lot of people get really worked up about what their choreography is. Like there's a meta component to this where like I'm at no point, in case you're Becky, tell me like if I'm wrong, but like there's not really enough time, especially if there's three dancers on the stage, for me to sit back and be like, well, do I like this choreography overall? Like I'm not actually... yes, like you're watching your friends that way, or you're watching your competitors that way, or you're watching dancers you admire that way. But in a competition context, like that's not what's going on in an adjudicator's mind at that moment, because we are watching for specific things. And again, the choreography can show those things off, your turnout, you know, your extension, all of those things. But like there isn't quite enough mental space, or maybe I'm not experienced enough to have the mental space to sort of metacognate whether I like this choreography or not. Even if when I'm just sitting watching a competition, I might have those thoughts. Oh, I really like that choreography. Oh, I don't really like that choreography. Yeah. The only other thing as it relates to choreography that I will sort of throw out there is, and look, we all did this as dancers. We probably all, you know, got this when, you know, as teachers. Like there's a tendency to go, kind of like what I said earlier, right? Oh, I saw the world champion do this, or I saw the world champion do that, and therefore, like, I need that to be good. That's just not accurate. There are incredible dancers who place quite highly without any of the latest and greatest. And there are plenty of people who try and incorporate all of the latest and greatest ineffectively. by all means, add techniques that challenge you, add techniques that show off what you are good at. I recognize, right, again, at a local fesh, if like, yeah, all right, fine. You might not place as well at a local fesh while you're learning this new thing that challenges you, but as long as it's ready for the major, you've kind of done the ramp up period you need to do to challenge yourself to get new techniques down. I think that's awesome. But don't fall into this trap that like, all right, I download Fesh TV, I watch the world, and I need to take every latest and greatest technique and shove it into my dancing, or the adjudicators are going to think I'm like terrible because I, you know, am not just doing basic clean dancing. Like that's just not the way it works.
Yeah. You're so good at words, Ryan.
I know.
I think
the rest of you.
Choreo, like to me, isn't so scientific. You know, I think we've all had parents or dancers who've said, my dancer doesn't have this move in their dance, and they feel that's holding them back. You know, I was at the Great Brits this year and watched a dancer in one of the ladies competitions. She didn't have one leap or lift in her reel. The highest her leg went was, I mean, we would call it a double up. Foot is touching the underneath knee and you've jacked your knee into the air. That was the highest her leg lifted, not an overdown, not a straight kick. And I noticed this because I was sitting in the audience and we were in the middle of getting new reel choreo. So I was watching, but this dancer was fabulous. And I think too, it's not apples and oranges. Like we talked about school styles. My school style would be more about clean and long lines. So putting a move in that a school does that is way more focused on power and athleticism and sharpness, like it might not translate on our choreo. So I don't think you can also just say, well, that world champ has this, but their school may be so different in how they would teach a slip jig or something. And it just wouldn't translate into your own style.
Very good. Okay. Yeah, that one had, I grouped together a bunch of choreography topics just because there were so many that were submitted.
You just got to make the adjudicator's job easy.
I feel validated.
If it's hard to decipher, if it's hard to decipher what's happening, that's not helpful. But yeah, so cater to, like Ryan said, a live review. This isn't Fesh TV. This isn't dance class where your teachers watch the same thing for 6 months. They get one shot to see you. So if it can't be immediately discerned, it's not clear enough.
Okay. What is your personal scoring system for the average competition? So you sit down, you watch your, I don't know, prelim under 14. What is your like personal scoring system, whether it's the numbers you use or the range that you use or how you actually go about, you know, docking points, or you can take that whatever direction you'd like.
I'll take a stab at it, I guess, which is okay. like for better or someone explained this to me once upon a time when I was studying for the exam, and it made a lot of sense, which is if you think about a world, at least in the way sort of American schools judge things, right? 90s is an A, 80s is a B, 70s is a C, 60s is a D, and so on. Look, I think there's two schools of thought here, right? One school of thought, and you know, I'd be curious, Casey or Becky, your perspective, because when it comes to exam prep time, there's a lot of debate between these schools of thought, right? One is it an A versus what you expect a beginner to do? Or is it an A for Irish dance objectively, i.e. you should never score a beginner in the 90s, because how could they possibly be in A when you've got open champs coming up? I tend to score every competition in, you know, most competitions in the same range. So I'm giving you an A versus my expectation of an ideal novice dancer versus my expectation of an ideal prize winner dancer versus my expectation of an ideal open champion dancer. And therefore my scoring system is almost always the same, sort of pivoted around an 80. That tends to be my approach. And the nice thing also about pivoting around at 80 is like, if you know, look, if your first dancer comes up and you're like, all right, well, I'm going to start somewhere in the middle. And then you found out that like, oh, they're the best dancer by a long shot. Like you don't have to go too far down. Or if you find out like, oh, that was the weakest dancer and everybody in this competition is spectacular. Like I've still got plenty of room on the upside to have plenty of space to mark. So I think broadly, that's my sort of philosophical way of putting it. Of course, with Irish points, it doesn't matter anyway. And in grades for ranking, it doesn't really matter what the number is. It just sort of matters what order you put them in.
Right.
Philosophically, I'm sort of rating toward an A, B, C, D schedule around a theoretical ideal dancer for that level.
Yeah, I agree with Ryan. I'm very similar in that regard. I have 90 and up is like absolutely excellent, but 80 to 90 is very good. 70 to 80 is good. In the 60s would be off time, and in the 50s would be the stops. And just quick side note, one thing I was not expecting in judging is that there's different types of stopping and they need to be adjudicated accordingly. It's like, and I never realized that that would be something that I had to consider. I thought a stop was just, I stopped, whatever. But it's like, there's stop and walk off. There's stop and like cry and walk off. There's stop and just walk off. There's stop and come back. There's stop and get back on. There's stop and get back on, but totally off time. There's all these different types of stops. So that originally I thought, oh, stop is 50, but now I have a whole 10 marks for stops because there's all different types of stops. But yeah, so that's my general grid that I use. I judge a beginner against what I would expect a beginner to provide. So I can, if it's a phenomenal beginner, I don't mind giving a beginner a mark in the 90s. Yeah, it's like my numbers are almost consistent, whatever grade or level I'm at. And so I categorize you just generally speaking, what category are you in? And then within that category, very specific about technique. And then you could be higher or lower within your category until you go off time and then you're right at the bottom, or you stop and then you're really at the bottom.
I tend to use the same range for most levels, and I usually start in the 70s. Because I really look at it like those numbers are just giving you a rank. You could number people 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But, you know, being cognizant that especially grades dancers who aren't as familiar with the Irish point system, they really interpret those raw scores as meaningful, and probably in North America equate them to like school marks. So I probably need to be more cognizant of that, to be honest. But I generally would start everybody around the 70s, and like the other two, exceptional dancers push up in the 80s, just outstanding, you know, way beyond the skill of the competition, the 90s, and then people with a lot of faults down in the 60s. I would like to say it's more scientific that missing your turnout 3 times means minus 1.5 marks. It's not so scientific for me. I think that's something too that has gotten easier to do with more experience. And I know in talking to adjudicators who have a lot more experience, they could close their eyes and picture what their novice dancer at an 82 looks like. You've just seen so many people that you know at that age, at this level, in this dance, this is generally where the average skill level is, and there are people above it and below it. And one of my mentors said to me though, which I really liked, she said when she's judging every dancer that walks out on the stage starts with 100, like before they've even danced, they could be her winner. She's really cautious not to prejudge people or prejudge the dance. You know, if you've seen them in something earlier in the day, everybody has the chance to come out and be your first place. And I just like that attitude. You're kind
I've
of
heard
marking
that before too.
From a point of view of giving rather than taking away. That said, in open champs, and I'm gearing up to do my first Oireachtas next year, it will be a little bit more ruthless in the opposite. You're taking away one fault, boom, because you need to make fast decisions in massive competitions. So I think grades and FESH is more focused on positive giving points, and I would opens and majors docking.
I would just say, like, Courtney, you used the word docking, and Becky, like, you just used the word docking there. Like, I'm not sure at any point I'm ever quote unquote docking points, right? I know there is a, there are some folks actually who would like to say, oh, you know, if you've missed your turnout, it should mean this, or, you know, things should be scored in some sort of checklist way. The reality is your score doesn't actually matter. The only thing that matters is the rank, right? We're there to rank dancers. We're not actually there to score dancers. And so it doesn't make a ton of sense to think of it, in my view, as docking or giving points.
It's assessing.
Mm-hmm. And so it can be really easy to think about. I think we get questions from students a lot, like, oh, you know, does it hurt me if I X, or does it hurt me if I Y? Like, the answer is always yes. It will always hurt you if you X, Y, or Z, which is do the technique wrong. Like, but you can't tell me, oh, which one is worse. Like, that's not actually what we're here to do, right? We're here to compare dancers versus other dancers. We're here to compare dancers versus, you know, sort of a standard of expectation. But, you know, which one is worse? Depends on how bad at turnout you are, or crossing, or missing your front clicks, or whatever it is, right? It matters who else shows up on the day that you're competing against. The point isn't how much does this hurt me, or can I afford to, like, not worry about my turnout or whatever. It just matters that you work, again, continuing to build your technique, and to not think of it in terms of what's adding points or docking points, but to think about it in terms of how do I get to my ideal state of dancing.
Yeah, and I suppose too, that's a good point, Ryan, and I more think docking like places. Like, yeah, I'm not taking off 2.5 points or 3 points, but you're moving down, you've just moved out of the top 10, or you've just moved into my bottom five, or, you know, that kind of thing. I think, yeah, dance, you just have to be consistent, because the adjudicator's going to look at you at one moment. And if that was the moment you didn't do the thing, it's going to reflect it in your placement.
Okay. I think the last big topic, maybe we'll do a couple like rapid fires at the end, is the function of writing comments. And like, I know Ryan touched on before that he feels, you know, a duty and a sense of pride in like providing constructive feedback to help dancers get better. I think we can probably all agree that's the function of writing comments, but we also know that writing comments isn't the function, like the primary function of you being there, right? The primary job is to rank the dancers, score the dancers, assess the dancers, as we just said. So how much time or focus or energy do you personally put into writing comments?
So like you said, the primary function is to rank and assess the dancers. So that would be the most important thing. Once the mark is clear, not necessarily written down because I wait until the end for timing purposes, but once the mark is clear and I have the mark in my head, then I can write comments. And I try to write as much as I can as long as I have all my marks in order. And the reason being, I come at it from, I have a school and I'm the only teacher in my school. And I use the judges' comments as help, as just extra eyes on my dancers to sort of guide us. Are we heading in a good direction? Do we have a blind spot? So say, for example, about 4 years ago now, like, every single one of my dancers, 100% of comments were get higher on your toes for every dancer at every FESH for about a 6 month period. So I was like, okay, obviously I'm not spending enough time on this. And we went like crazy trying to get them higher up on their toes. And after about a year, we stopped getting those comments. So I really appreciate comments as a teacher. So as a judge, I try to provide as many comments as possible. But again, it's not the primary focus. The primary is the mark. And then once that's settled, then I can write as comments.
Yeah, I agree. mostly from the teacher perspective, whether it's something like Casey said, it's just a gap that we didn't realize, or sometimes it is so helpful to have somebody else say the thing you've been saying for 6 months, because that will strike with the dancer and they'll choose to believe it. So that's really valuable. It's funny, like I know for Arfesh, we've hired international adjudicators, and in Ireland, they don't often do comments. So I usually send people home with a bottle of Tylenol because they're be writing all weekend when they're not used to it. But I think at least in North America, it's become an expectation of dancers and families. They value it. I know as a teacher, I value it. So I do try really hard. When I first started out and when I was studying, I got feedback from a lot of colleagues that I was writing comments too much as a teacher. You're not teaching people to be better. You're assessing what was there and what wasn't. And that has helped kind of just hone the shorthand. So sometimes I still would have I'm reluctant not to be even more specific, like that one move you did on the second foot of the left step when you were at the back of the stage, if you could just do, that's really hard to do for everybody. So probably the comments are a bit more broad than what your teacher will give you. But yeah, generally if I'm writing a comment though, it's a pretty strong theme.
I so agree with you, by the way, on that. I feel like every new adjudicator wants their comments to be those of a teacher. I struggle with that as well, where you're like, you want to like, almost like, all right, in the first step, there was this thing. And the
second, I would drill them.
Right. Yes. And eventually you learn that like, actually what you're trying to give is this one or two things will be the difference between where you are today and attaining the next level. But I, if you don't mind, Courtney, like I'd like to also just give like a shout out. Like I have my AD at this point because of a gentleman who just passed away last year, who I think you probably danced for a zillion times as a child as well, a gentleman named Roger Casey, who was a...
Yes, I still remember you telling me that that was your aspiration as a judge.
You know, who was an older gentleman who judged around New York all through my growing up, who did almost exclusively grades for 10 years, like just showed up at every fesh. And look, I was a boy in the 90s. There were not a lot of us. And it was usually pretty apparent who was one and two, if there were even two of us. And to his credit, he wrote comment after comment after comment after comment for 10 years on my dancing. And given that I did not have much competition, at least until sort of I made it into the higher levels where more of us conglomerated, that was a huge difference maker. And if you're judging in places, like I've had the opportunity to judge in places where there are not a lot of Feshna every year. I've judged in places where there are not a lot of dancers. Like the comments can be really important. I know that you're there, you're being paid to rank, but I firmly believe that you're actually being paid to assist the dancers in their growth. And that means comments are a part of that. And so it's important to me to have those. Like I know like a major is a different thing, right? A major is a ranking exercise, but a FESH is a personal development exercise. And therefore I feel really passionate about comment giving.
Okay. This one, maybe you guys are so fresh, it hasn't happened to you yet, but maybe it has as a teacher. You know, dancer comes home with their marks, they get last, but the comment says nice or nice dancer, discuss.
Oh, I've had it as a dancer myself, had it with my own students. I hope I haven't done it to somebody, but I'm sure you have. That's the hard thing about, we're competing against other people. You could be nice. Everybody could have been nice that day. Maybe it's a really high standard, or it was three at a time, or it was a fast reel and you got nice down and you intended to go back and beef up the comments, but the fesh was behind. So they're putting the next group out. You know, I think I'd like to start, you know, with a good assumption that there's probably a reason the person wasn't trying to, I guess, ghost you with information. Something probably came up and they didn't get to put their second comment down, but it is hard because we have, especially in North America, become so used to those comments equating to the mark. And when they don't, that's frustrating.
Yeah. I always try to remind my dancers that the, like, read between the lines for the comment. So it could be you were nice, but you weren't phenomenal, and you need to be phenomenal at this level. It could be something like that. And I agree, Becky, it's like a lot of people think that the comment explains the place, and it doesn't necessarily. It could just be a general comment of how they felt about you, or a general, like Ryan said, here, these are one or two things for you to get to the next level, you know? So it could be, you're nice and clean, but that also mean, that could mean you're not powerful enough, yeah, or you're not rhythmic enough, or something like that.
And the opposite could be true. You could get first place and only have a critique.
Yeah.
Because you were the best, but it's like, God, if you would just fix that one little bit there, you'd be flying. So yeah, they're not always A to Z.
Mm-hmm.
I think you guys got it. I'm with you.
I know, but you're better at the words.
All right, here's one for Ryan's words. Uh-oh. What, if any, biases do you find yourself working through when judging?
I mean, certainly for me, the bravado thing, we talked about it, right? Like, I like performative dancers. And I'm probably more willing than most to overlook technical flaws for a great performer than I am willing to overlook technical flaws for someone who is not a great performer. Like, for me, stage presence can, like, sort of like smooth out a bunch of technique things because I'm just enjoying your dancing so much. I know that that's a bias that I have. I don't know if that's like right, wrong, or indifferent, but like someone whose stage presence is captivating, who makes me lean forward, I'm no longer looking at your turnout. I'm just not, or certainly not with as critical an eye as someone that I'm less invested in watching from a stage presence standpoint. That is certainly a bias that I have when I sit behind a table with a pen.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. So earlier I said I either look down at the feet or up at the posture. But a really amazing dancer will have me looking almost like in the middle of them. And I don't lean forward. I find myself leaning back because I relax into it. And I just enjoy what I'm watching. I don't know. To me, I understand what you're saying about, like, it's a bias. I find it's almost like them making my job easy, which is a bit what Becky's mentioned. It's, they're allowing me just to take it all in, all at the same time, because there's an ease to what they're doing. They're so well prepared, and they're coming out and wanting to win, which to me is part of competition. It's not just the best technique, you know, because I mean, if we wanted, we could just get, we could probably develop robots to assess all the techniques, but it's, you know, the angle of the turnout and the crossing with the angle of the hips, it could all be mathematically assessed if we really wanted to go that route, but it's dance, and it's, there's more to it, and it's competition. So the performance aspect does play a role in that. So I see why you think it's a bias. Personally, I see it as them making the judge's job easier.
I think that's like one of the things that's so amazing about Irish dance. It's like, okay, let's take long distance running. That's a really athletic pursuit, but you could grunt while you're doing it. You could let your tongue waggle while you're doing it. You could wipe the sweat off your forehead. Irish dance is really athletically challenging, but we need to remain composed and make it look simple. And that's what's, like, to me, so amazing about it. And there's nothing worse than feeling nervous for somebody. Like, oh God, are they going to fall? Oh God, are they going to hurt themselves? Like, your heart's aching for them. So when a dancer puts you at ease, it's like, oh wow, you're making this look easy. And of course, they're probably working harder than everybody else to make their body do those things while keeping that appearance. I think for me, I have no biases. I'm perfect. But I'm just kidding. I hope I don't have any. If none, you know, you're not like, oh yep, yeah, there comes that school identifier. You know, that's definitely not it. I think you, I would probably be biased or extra generous towards people who look like they're taking the competition seriously. So whether that's the nice bravado, like I said earlier, you've presented yourself appropriately for the event. If you look uninterested in being here, I had a colleague tell me one time she had a dancer come out, exceptional dancer. This was a small fesh. And the dancer wore a stick-on mustache above their top lip because they could, because they were fab, because their friends thought it was funny, and she tanked them. It wasn't a technical, the dancer was fabulous, but she thought it was disrespectful. I thought it was disrespectful and funny. So I suppose that, like, I think you respect the event, respect your competitors. I'm trying to think, I'm sure there is something. I think
we're going to find out. But Becky, you mentioned you're doing your first Aractus next year. I'm on my first Aractus. Casey, I don't know if you're in there somewhere, but you know, like, I think
that's Casey has to run one.
Oh, right. Yes. Right. Regional director. But in any event, I think like there are a lot of folks who, like, we're going to find out what our biases are, and they might not be intentional, right? Like, there are a lot of people who say things like, oh, well, they like this school or they like this thing or whatever. And like, I don't necessarily know who the schools are, but I will come back from a fesh and I'll be reviewing my own marks and I will find out, Becky, I judged your fesh. And I found out that there is a school in Eastern Canada somewhere that turns out I really liked their dancers. I had no idea.
Was it mine? No.
It wasn't. But it turns out I really liked their dancers. I didn't know in advance, but there's something about the way they've taught their dancers, the way their choreography shows off technique, that it turns out I really liked. I have a bias towards those things. I did not know in advance. I only found out later. I suspect that you'll find out all three of us have biases towards certain styles or certain ways that dancers present themselves on stage that we don't even know we have, but you find out after the fact.
And I'm with Case, though. I think that's more preference and taste.
Yeah.
Bias to me, and maybe it's just the word. I just have a negative connotation that means you're biased towards redheads or you're biased towards children dancers over adults. I don't know. For me, that just says something negative. I certainly have preferences and tastes for style, what technique I think is more valuable, you know, that kind of thing.
You're good.
Hopefully nothing nasty.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's more a preference and taste thing. I'll admit I have a bit of bias when it comes to teen dancing.
Oh, I was going to say that too, Case. I forgot.
So for teen dancing, the only thing and it kind of goes back to pet peeves, so I probably should have mentioned this. It's when they don't respect the tradition of the dance that I have trouble.
Elaborate.
Elaborate. So if it's too, how do I even describe this? If the interpretation is just too
far outside what the book says.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not a book error, but they're really playing very deep in the gray zone. I have trouble liking that. I also, on the flip side, I also don't always like when people interpret the book literally, because these dances originate from a long, long time ago. And with competition, there's an evolution to the dances. So you do have to borrow a bar here and there for a catch just to make it a dance and just to make it flow. So a too strict interpretation of the book, I don't necessarily love either, but when it goes too far, I have trouble with that.
I will note, by the way, just for anybody who might be downloading Fesh TV to study for their AD, Casey's teams are an outstanding place to start because they're stunning.
Oh, thank you.
No, I agree. And I'm not lying. I was going to say that. Teams would be one thing where, yeah, you can't necessarily go by the book because it takes more than two bars to do a full turn and get over to the other fella. Like, you know, so there are some of it because what we're doing with our legs has evolved since these Kaylees were first created. And commission has made space for that. You are allowed to interpret, you know, within counts of bars, and it doesn't specify how the hands should look when they're up. So, you know, there's going to be variation, and that's lovely. But when there's gimmick for the sake of gimmick, or it's so hard to tell, did you actually do the move right? That's pushed too far, I think, for Kaylee dancing. And yeah, it's not respecting the parameter of the dance.
All right. Yeah, I mean, so much good stuff. I think I'm going to have to break this into a two-parter. But let's wrap up with a couple rapid fires. So this is just your personal opinion. Think of it as like a pass or smash type of thing, depending on what the prompt is. First one is, are you for or against dropping the high and low, even if it means that your mark is the one that is dropped?
Four.
Also four.
Also four. I don't care if mine... I mean, I think I would question myself if mine was dropped every single time. But no, I don't mind. I like, maybe controversially, that Irish dancing is subjective. So it doesn't bother me to have difference of opinions.
And humans miss stuff and humans make mistakes, and it is okay to average those things out.
Yep.
And to me, the most important thing is always the dancer and not the judge. And the judge, we're there to provide the system. And the system is supposed to serve the dancer. So if my personal mark is dropped, it's okay, because that will best serve the dancers in the competition.
Okay. Speaking of the system, now that you guys are in it, if there was one thing you could change about the current judging structure or system, what would it be?
The difference in the first 5 or 6 Irish points.
Agreed.
I don't mind that we use Irish points. I just think the first handful of marks are so significantly weighted. I think that could be distributed a little bit better.
I agree. They're very wide. I do like that getting a first weights you well, but it is a big,
yeah, it should,
far cry from second. And I do not usually think the difference between first and second are that far apart.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so that's everybody's?
I think, I like that it's subjective. There's pros and cons, don't get me wrong. I like that we do not have required moves, as in figure skating. You know, I'm just thinking these are things that are being discussed around scoring.
Yep.
Of the one that I've heard, that's the one I'm interested in changing.
There's okay. One that I heard that I thought was interesting. I still think my answer is officially the Irish points, but sort of like a diversity on judging panels.
Mm.
Especially at the majors, when you get, you know, it's a panel of 5 and 4 are from the same region, judging dancers from that region. I think that could be looked at. I don't necessarily have an answer to it, but having diversity on judging panels, I think, could be a good way to move forward.
I agree.
Okay. Next one is ideal panel size for major championship.
5 or up.
Yeah, 5 or 7.
Yeah, I have a preference for 5 who watch the whole competition, as opposed to
the next one. That's the next question.
Rotating. Sorry to have jumped ahead, because I think if you are asking the adjudicators to find the best dancer, they're able to do that over the course of 3 rounds. Now, there's some downsides to that. Like, you might actually end up weirdly marking someone's 3rd round in order to give them the sort of accurate overall place, versus in a rotating panel situation, everyone is giving that person the accurate mark to exactly that round, but nobody has a holistic view of that dancer, versus asking the panel to have a holistic view of a single dancer, which we pretty much always do at a FESH. We just don't do it at a major.
All right, so it sounds like everyone said 5, and we had a 7 in there.
5 or higher. I think
5 or higher
should be the minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah. To Ryan's point, I think there's pros and cons to a set panel for all 3 rounds and rotating panels. I'd love to see majors that almost on a rotation, the judging panel, and it doesn't just change based on the organizing committee, where it's like, for this year, it will be 5 judges rotating. next year will be seven judges sitting. That kind of thing. I don't know if it's even possible, but I think there's merit to both. And so it would be good to see both on a somewhat regular basis.
Okay. Like in theory, you're saying like the Oireachtas is five rotating through three rounds. The North American Championships is always seven set or so on. Is that the idea?
You could do that, or you could do something like on even years, the Oireachtas is five rotating.
I like that.
Odd years, it's seven set. You could do
something. I like that.
There's different ways of approaching it, but having both, I think, could be beneficial.
I had not heard that. I like that.
Yeah, because I think the one big blind spot of rotating panels is that, like, the best dancer in the first two rounds might, like, stop in their set, but they might still have the scores to win, even though they, like, weren't actually the best dancer.
Although I think, you know, they're getting better at making rules to account for things like that.
Yeah.
Stops, false starts, not completing rounds. There are things that are starting to be better in place to pull you out of that. I'm rotating all the way every time. I just like letting the math. And as much as I said earlier, we should be fixing the better part of the problem. I don't know. I guess I just don't have, even though I genuinely believe the majority of adjudicators are wonderful and fair, I just don't trust that unconscious things couldn't happen. Or like Ryan said, you'd have to throw somebody a dodgy set just to make things go the way you want. And then how are you explaining that to your kids as a teacher? So for me, I'm rotating all the way.
Okay. All right. Next one is a yes or no. Will Fesh TV have any impact on you as an adjudicator, especially those of you that are going into your first Oireachtas next year?
Yes, only in the sense that I feel like in the past couple of years, there's been inconsistently, especially in teams, of what a penalty equals. So, at the Worlds in Montreal, people were being DQ'd for certain types of penalties that at an Oireachtas you wouldn't have been disqualified for. And I shouldn't even say Fesh TV impacts it. I will just be very aware. I would want to really understand the rules.
What do you want? Yeah, and I guess that's kind of the nature of the question.
What do I mark? Because that can be recalled. So I would want to make sure I super understand what the parameters of that event are. But the fact that people are watching, nope, doesn't bother me.
Doesn't bother me either. It's not going to, it certainly isn't going to affect anything about the way that I judge. I also think it's really important. I love Fesh TV. I will tell you, like, it has been 14 years since I competed, and my mother is still angry that dancers who dance now can have like a video of their set dance, and she has no videos of me from when I was competing, which I'm thrilled about because I do not need to remember how not good I actually was. Like, I think it's great. I think Fesh TV is great, but I think everyone needs to remember that your ability to judge the dancing from the vantage point of that camera and rewatch back over and over and over and over again and analyze everything that you see is different than an adjudicator's ability to judge the dancing in that moment from their vantage point, who knows how long into their day. Like, it's just different. You can't look at Fesh TV and say, I have the same perspective the adjudicators had. They might be right, they might be wrong, but it is different. And that's okay. I think the benefits of being able to watch back dancers you admire and watch back yourself and see how you're present, like, it's great. But don't mistake Fesh TV for a replica of what the adjudicator saw that day and feel that Monday morning quarterbacking the competition is the same thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. I think that's a very important point for anyone who is listening and is still dancing or is a parent. Last question. You can walk into a FESH, a major, any competition you want, and you're allowed to sit down at any type of competition you want. So it could be girls solos, it could be figure choreography, it could be dance drama, it could be anything. what competition are you picking to sit down and judge?
It would not be forehand. That's just what I know for sure.
Honestly, any. I'm very...
No, you got to pick one.
Maybe this is too... You know, maybe this is the new adjudicator in me talking. But look, I'll end where I started. I like watching preliminary championship competitions. I don't care what age. I like watching preliminary championship competitions. Count me in for a prelim. Anyone out there organizing a FESH, I'm here for it.
Okay.
I'll say probably set dances. Whether that's prelim sets, open sets, sets at a major, just a set round. I do not. Okay. I like watching people one-on-one and they're giving you a show and not forehands.
For me, I think it would depend on the event. And it would depend on what I'm trying to learn and what I'm trying to get better at in that moment. So how do I explain that? Like you mentioned figure choreographies. If it's the world, it might be figure choreography. And it's only because we don't have them in our region, or we rarely do. It's very rare that we have a figure choreography. So that is something that is such a treat to watch and such a treat to watch live that I don't get any other time, you know?
You'd want to go as a spectator or as a judge?
Both.
Yeah.
But a FESH, if I knew there was one particular dancer who I love that dancer and I've never seen them live, then I might want to judge that competition, you know? So I think it would depend on the context of the FESH or of the competition. But if you want a generalized answer, is that?
Yeah, that works.
The intention of the question. I think a generalized answer, I would go with champ. Anywhere from 14 to 16.
Longest rapid fire question answer.
That's what I was going to say. Me and Ryan basically said, we want puppies for Christmas and you want world peace.
Yeah. That's why there's three of you, so we can get all the different perspectives. But thank you to all of you for being so generous with your time and for each of your unique perspectives. I think it's going to be really helpful for anyone, you know, even other teachers to listen to this, or other adjudicators, maybe they'll, you know, think about some ideas that they have, or, you know, you guys might be getting messages after this.
Good ones, hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah, hopefully.
Thanks, Courtney. This was really cool. I've listened to your podcast basically since it started. And I like anything that brings Irish dance people together.
Me too.
And kind of breaks down those territorial barriers that we have. So yeah, this was awesome.
Great. Yeah. Yeah, and thanks, Ryan, for rallying this crew together.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan.
Thanks for you guys for sitting the gauntlet, the AD, with me.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on TCRG to CEO Radio.